I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope.
Last night at 12:30 in the morning, I ate a can of mushrooms.
I did.
Pieces and stems, if you're wondering. As opposed to buttons, it was pieces and stems, which will be my next year's fantasy football team name.
Pieces and stems.
Pieces and stems.
And the Bulldog.
I should be ashamed to admit this publicly, but whatever. How long have we been doing this? I'm a junkie. I can't be trusted.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Oh, that became more than a fantasy team name, I'll tell you. That became a brand. Pieces and stems. A brand. We have some new lighting in here today.
Do you actually have a fantasy team named Pieces and Stems?
No, but I have an account where that's my username.
Oh, okay.
My main account is named Pieces and Stems,
all right.
Which I don't know. I don't put enough thought into naming accounts. Shope Talk on Twitter doesn't really work because it just is more reason to think it would be shop, like Shop Talk, right?
So oh, yeah.
I thought it was clever and never, then just rushed into it.
I never thought of it.
Yeah, it doesn't really work. Like a lot of my stuff almost works, but it's still missing a little polish, a little more like that.
Mm.
So new lighting in here for our viewers.
New lighting, new angles, and I don't know. I'm already. I gotta close the page.
Really?
I don't know.
Your nose hairs are.
No, I don't know. I just don't
get in focus.
I just don't like the. I don't know. New. It'll be fine. It'll grow on me. I don't know.
Nose hairs?
No. Not,
the camera.
Yeah. Just where it's. I don't know. I gotta get used to it. Oh, now G's messing around. Gee, it's fine. It's me. I'm psychotic. It's not. It'll be fine.
Well, you have to tune in now.
Right.
Don't you, out there? Don't you have to pull over and find this show on YouTube?
You can see more of my, you can almost see my, yeah, you can see my shorts. Oh, boy, I got to start thinking about what I'm wearing.
You haven't been doing that?
A shirt, yeah. I could be in my underwear. The other camera, you never see me from like the
waist down.
The man boobs down. That's it. That's been the shot.
I
can see my gut and my shorts and
I wore
maybe a knee.
I should let you just finish.
All right. I'll stop. I'm done.
Who knows where that ends? I wore a bucket hat in today.
Yes, you did.
I have not had a bucket hat in decades. I used to wear one in the 90s for a minute. I don't know why.
When you were in Oasis?
Yeah, when I was in Oasis, and then I got in a big fight with my brother.
That was the end of that.
That was the end of that.
Yeah. Now they're going out without you.
Right.
So sad.
So now I have a bucket hat, and I bought it. It's my son's club or a box lacrosse team. It has the logo there,
right.
St. Catharines Athletics. And I bought it between games on Sunday. The finals were on Sunday, this tournament. And so I got out of the car from the store, from front row to the arena with the bucket hat on. I'm ready. Go A's, right? The whole thing.
All right.
And I looked at my wife and I said, what do you think? Can I wear this? And she said nothing. So obviously that was a no.
That's a no in wife speak for
absolutely
sure.
Absolutely a no.
Yeah.
If she said yes, if she meant yes, she would have said yes. She said nothing. So that meant no. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess I won't wear this. And she said, it's just that it's indoors. Who would wear a bucket hat indoors?
Oh.
And so.
You know who would?
Me?
Fans of Oasis. No.
Oh, right. Okay. Because I did wear it in with, now I'm wearing a visor. I brought a visor.
Backup
to replace
gear.
The bucket hat with.
Yeah. I thought the bucket hat was going to be a pretty strong statement today. So, I was just waiting to see what was going to happen.
You can't wear headphones over a bucket hat.
I didn't say anything. That's a good point. That is a very good point.
I don't think this is a crime.
What do you mean?
Headphones over a visor, I don't think it's a crime.
No,
I don't think it's anything.
Over a hat. No, it's fine.
Or even
fine.
The morning guys would be
like a ball cap. I do that when I wear a hat.
The morning show would be on the street months ago if there were a thing about headphones and hats. Like I've never seen anybody except Sal on that stream not wearing a hat. Nate comes in today, he's got a hat. Jeremy and Joe look like they're playing golf at 9:30 every day. Or what, 10:30? When would it be?
10.
They're on until 10, so it would be after that. They look like they're going golfing after. They probably are.
I most days don't wear a hat. So you've seen me without a hat on this feed.
No, I meant the morning.
Oh, the morning. Oh, sure.
Yeah,
okay.
When Sal is on, I don't think necessarily he wears a hat.
Right.
And I don't think he usually does.
And Owen isn't on camera because he's running the video stuff, but he's often wearing hats. Hats, you know.
When
hats.
Hats, you know.
Dot, dot, dot.
Moving
you know.
On. Yeah. Right. It's Larry King's thoughts. Hats, right? Out there, right? Was it yesterday, I think it was, when I mentioned how I'm, quote, reading audiobooks.
Yeah.
But it was The Bronx Zoo, the Yankees book from the 78 Yankees, and now Ball 4, Jim Boughton, it's like 69, like a famous, interesting sports biography. And how things come up that remind you how much, well, baseball, but sports has changed. You know, strategy stuff that comes up and just how jocular it is, I think maybe is very different now. Much more businesslike now, I'd say. You know, listening to Boughton talk about trying to get $2,000 more in salary and not being able to is just incredible to think about. The professional Major League Baseball, the Yankees. You know, anyway, but I don't want to make a point about that. It's just things that have evolved. A lot of it's like the Moneyball kind of stuff in sports, that analytics and what that has meant. And there was a clip today of Dan Campbell talking about fourth downs. And, you know, he's been big on that, right? He's been big on go for it. I mean, he got beat in the NFC Championship game 2 years ago when he was, what, 0 for 3 on fourth down, was it, in that game? Yep. So, and our guest yesterday, Jeremy Kahn, brought up two-point plays. Like the Ravens lost in Buffalo in the playoffs. They went for two twice and went 0 for 2, and the Bills in Kansas City also. And we were moving on to a different question, and Jeremy said, wait, I'd like to know what you think about this. Like he put it back to us, and I love when a guest does that. You know, like they're into the conversation, and I like to do that as a guest. Well, what do you think about that? And so he's listening, right? And I didn't really answer him, but, you know, I love it. Like I feel like it's been my movement for more than a decade, right? I mean, when did we get to the point now where we're at now or closer to it where it wasn't surprising? When did it cease to be surprising that teams would go on fourth and one? Was that 5 years ago? Was that 10? Was it less?
I think it's I want to say less.
When did you stop expecting to see the punter on fourth and one? For the Bills, it's like with Allen. I think it lines up right with him.
Yeah, 5 years might be a good window. But I think even expecting it is another thing. Like, it takes a while of them doing it for you to then expect it, right? So I wouldn't cop to any longer being surprised when I see the punter trot onto the field. Or vice versa. I mean, like, oh no, they're not going to go for it. You know, like it's ingrained now. Like it's close. They're probably going to go for this. It doesn't even seem like that much of a decision anymore. It feels almost automatic. I think probably Allen's ascendance and us getting comfortable with McDermott being a coach who operates that way. Yeah, like 5 years is my window. There, I would say on that. The 2-point stuff, I feel like, is fresher. At least the. Like the what is the latest thing now? You're down 14 and like go for the two the first time so that you can win with a touchdown and an extra point. Like that's the idea.
Yes.
I feel like that. I only started realizing that I think a couple seasons ago that it became prevalent. I think, and I'm not sure if my timeline is warped on that, but that feels like the newest thing that we've had to sort of wrestle with.
Yeah, and it's probably about to get. There's probably about to be something newer than that.
The kickoff stuff, maybe.
That's what happens. I wonder how much more there is to do. You know, like, why did football get to a point where now you're surprised when you see the punter on fourth and one? You pretty much always are. Unless you're inside your own 30 or something, where you might expect to see the punter. But anything even close to midfield, fourth and one, like that's a go for it play. And even the announcers know that now. They're the last, you know, the last realm or whatever to get it, because they're all former players, and they had to succumb to the reality that, okay, no, actually this is smart, quote smart. Doesn't mean it's going to work every time, of course. But is there more? I was just thinking about this a little bit, because like the battle was won a long time ago. I mean, people who mostly didn't come from football were able to convince football to actually do this. How? Owners who will hire as many people as they can, infinite wealth, hiring people with data backgrounds that, you know, Philadelphia won with Foles, and that was a team that was doing this kind of stuff, and you're going to copy the winners. So then it became, I think, am I wrong? I think mainstream guys that are not former players. Maybe they were like youth players, but that's not why they're there.
But they're data analysts. That's their job. And there's a team of them on each team now, I think. How they operate. And they're up there. The Doug Peterson Eagles example was red light, yellow light, green light. Like, we're going to tell you, like, you know, that you make the call, yellow light, you know, green light, definitely do it. Red light, no, don't do it. And, you know, whatever system every team has got, like, that is kind of where it started. Like, that's the first team I remember, the first coach I remember talking openly about that communication being a thing. Like, they're telling me what to do or what I should do. You know, maybe telling me what to do is a little too strong for a football coach to accept. But, yeah, basically the idea was, yeah, I've got help. These people are telling me, here's the situation, and, you know, our data tells us you should definitely go for this.
That Super Bowl, I mean, it was fourth and goal at the one or the two at the end of the half, and they went for it, and heads were exploding, and they threw a pass to the quarterback.
Right.
You got it now? Are we good? We weren't. I mean, every time a team misses on fourth and one, the Aikmans of the world are going to tell you, like, why it was dumb, I guess. But We should have been good, like, right there. Philadelphia gets that touchdown, wins that game against Brady, and, like, it could have even been a bigger story than it was. But I think football took notice of it. I'll tell you what I think is next, and this is back to Campbell. And this has been part of my thinking about fourth down for a long time. It's not just about your odds on fourth and two, your win probability. How many times are you going to get 2 yards on a play? All that stuff versus, you know, giving the ball up, which is what you're doing. Like Jeremy calls those turnovers, right? When your punts are turnovers. So it's just a matter of how you sell it sometimes or how you spin it. But it's not just about the 2 yards. It's about the rest of the series from first and 10 on. And that, I think, is, I don't know if it's going to be a big discussion all the time or whatever. But once you arrive in a world where fourth and two, say, becomes normally a go for it call, which is kind of where we are, almost where we are, then watch what happens on first, second, and third downs. Like, that's, watch what happens there, because everything is different if you are thinking this way. And I don't know if coaches are mostly there yet. I think they've learned how to, you know, go for it on fourth and two. But are they setting up for fourth and two? I thought of this yesterday late when we were recapping that Ravens game and how the Bills had first and goal at the 10 with a 5-point lead in that game, like 3 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And got to third and goal at the two. I don't remember the play. I can't picture the play, but Allen got stopped. So fourth and two, and then they, you know, they kicked that field goal because it put them up eight with 2 minutes, and that I think, you know, was reasonable. But setting up, I mean, how Allen is great in so many ways, but it can't be overstated the advantage the Bills have with a guy like that in this particular area, where he can get
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Didn't on that one example, but you know, or Kansas City,
right?
But he can kind of on a not game on the line kind of play, when everybody's just going to go all in on him, he can get a handful of yards almost anytime he wants it. And what kind of an advantage is that? It's just massive.
Yeah.
And if you have, even if you have Joe Burrow, who doesn't do any of that, second and seven, I mean, he better make it, or he's going to be in, yeah, you know, a dime defense, third and seven. Even like, it's just the Dak is stacked so in favor of the runners now, and how that meshes with fourth down strategy is just big. I know you weren't expecting this on July 8th, but it came up a little bit yesterday, and it was on Twitter today, and I just wanted to say it.
One thing that I think that just a wire just tripped as you're talking, you're like, what's next? And this isn't exactly an answer to what's next, definitively, because I think it maybe is already happening, that setting up for fourth and two. If fourth and two is green light, fourth and one certainly is. Fourth and two, I don't know. I don't feel like that's as automatic a go, depending on where you are. Certainly on the other side of midfield, maybe, but on your side, still, I think, a little apprehensive. Still, if the object is to keep the ball, right? Keep the ball, keep gaining yards, right? Keep getting first downs. Is it possible, maybe even likely, that the swing back toward running backs and run heavier offenses, run heavier formations, is to some extent a reaction to that? Like, is there a trickle down from a bunch of coaches sitting around in June and July before training camp starts and talking about trends in the league and like the kind of meetings you should be having with your football department, I think, pretty regularly, you know, like, you know, what's happening? What are the trends? What are your peers talking about? Whatever, right? Just brainstorming. And it's, you know, well, the data's telling us that fourth and one, fourth and two is go. So, you know, sure, we'd rather not be in fourth and two, but if we trust our guy to get it, is it not safer for us to just run the ball a lot and see if we can't get to fourth and one?
Yep.
And then we're just going to convert it, and we're eating clock. You don't have the ball, so you can't hurt me. I'm controlling everything, and I've gotten conservative because of, the outrageous display of going for it on fourth and one has spun me back to, well, you know, 4 yards a carry.
Right.
That's going to work for me. If I'm going for it on fourth down, that math computes. You know, I mean, it's not, you can't bank on it every time, but still, like, I wonder if that is in some, even, I don't want to say guys, the coaches wouldn't be aware of it, but if that's in, it's baked in somewhere to what we're seeing in football.
Yeah, I think that's really good. Yes, it should be.
Yeah, it makes sense.
All different math, run versus pass, everything, when it's three plays versus four. I mean, it's just all different math. 3 yards a carry, when you don't run the ball that well, 15 years ago, is a punt.
Right.
Second and seven, third and four, fourth and one, punt. Like, that's what Jaron's Bills mastered, was, you know, running the ball and coming up short and punting. Like that. And isn't it, like, this is like a lot of things, I don't mean this to be so harsh, but looking back, how stupid were we? Like, just, it's one of those things in sports and in life where you're just like, how did we ever think like that? How did we ever not get it?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I do think there's more ground to cover with football and this stuff. And I think some of it is this, I mean, setting up for fourth down, because you're thinking ahead. Third and five, does not have to be a seven-step drop.
Right.
On, you know, if you're going to go for it on fourth and two, depending on where you are on the field. I mean, right? So that's coming. I think we're going to get more of it. Maybe the kickoff thing contributes because it's shorter fields.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can talk about another one of my favorites is how the deeper in your own end you are, which is when more people than ever tell you how dumb your gamble is. How can you go for it on your own 28? That kind of thing is not dumb when you think about how much time the other team's drive will take. Because it should be one stop and the drive is over. Field goal or no stops and a touchdown. It could be right. One play.
Right.
I mean, if they're taking over at the 28-yard line, the conventional thinking would be that this is really bad. That's why you punt. So that they can start at their own 28-yard line instead of mine.
But you are going to get the ball back a lot sooner.
You're going to get the ball back a lot sooner no matter what. I mean, no matter what. You could go stop them three and out, and then you're going to get the ball back, you know, just as fast. But still, like, their drive cannot take very long. And if you end up in a game that's more like basketball, where you're not just willingly giving the ball to the other team like football does, okay, now we're talking. We could see, if the kickoff thing comes and the running point you make and more data, it's twofold how the data is based on what's happened in the past, right? What's my win probability up 7-3, second quarter, third and five, X yard line? Like that's what all that is. It's based on historical events. But this is changing in one direction, and so then will that data, and you'll just have sort of like a compound effect where mm-hmm. more and more often, I think you're going to see a green light. And I don't know. That's the kind of stuff I love. I mean, I would love to see all that be correct. Let's go to Tim here. Hi, Tim. Tim, no?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. There you are. Yeah. Hi, Tim. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I was just thinking, I've actually been reading some analytics books recently. I was reading Moneyball, and it was talking about, you know, analytic data and how blanketed it is. And so we say, you know, fourth and one, go for it. Fourth and two, go for it. You know, generally green light, red light, yellow light. What I've been thinking about more is team-specific and player-specific data. So, you know, for example, if it's fourth and two and you're the Ravens, you might have a 60% chance of, you know, converting. If you're at fourth and two and you're, you know, you have Jake Fromm at quarterback, you might have a 25% chance of converting. So I'd be really interested to learn how teams' internal models kind of affect how individual decisions are made outside of just, you know, taking this broad set of data and applying it to very specific circumstances.
Right. This is always like kind of the excuse that the Bills would make or teams would make when they weren't in line with the numbers. Well, you know, McDermott has talked like this before. I mean, he's aggressive enough. I mean, he's not slow when it comes to fourth down and all the rest. But, you know, he would make this point. He's made it plenty of times.
Who am I playing? What are they good at? Who are their best players? Like, all of that. You know, teams should be doing exactly what they're, I'd be surprised if they're not.
Me too. They are.
Like the Bills should know what Josh Allen's success rate on a sneak to the left is. I mean,
it's 100% of their sneaks.
It's almost fantastic. But, you know, they did get stuffed a few times. They may need to find a new wrinkle somewhere for that to try to keep that train going. But sure, teams should absolutely know. And going into a game, no, I think that's a part of the preparation. Like, what is this team good at? What do they – like, the next time the Bills see the Chiefs, I would be very surprised if they just sneak Allen, you know, in between Dawkins and the left guard, Edwards, because that got jammed in the AFC title game.
Yeah, that's one sort of ironic thing. There is no data on Allen sneaking right because it's never happened.
Right.
There's literally no data on that. Yeah, McDermott was on our show last year after a game and talked about that, how every game is different and they prepare mm-hmm. based on the opponent and tendencies and things like that, how it does affect what their strategy might be in a given game. Thanks, Tim. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. We'll talk to Sal later. Hope to hear from you as we go through the day. This is WGR.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at 1-888-EAR-POD-1
on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.